Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs, and welcome to, ta-da, episode 100 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, as usual. Can you believe it? 100 episodes of this podcast. If you had told me 2 years ago that we would reach 100 episodes, I would say, I don't really anticipate that, but that's great if it does. But literally 2 years ago, come Thursday, the 22nd of February, so by the time you hear this, that will have already passed. But 2 years ago, we started the podcast, Law Entrepreneur, and luckily we've been around for 100 episodes, and it's unbelievable. I can only surmise that it's because of all the great guests that we've had on the show that have allowed us to stick around and continue to grow. Our listenership continues to expand. We add more and more people literally every month from around the world, frankly, which is shocking to me that people in other countries would actually listen to this podcast, but they do. And so I thank you, the listener, for all your support and your continued dedication to the show, and hope that I can bring you another 100 over the next 2 years. Having said that, let me just also make a quick announcement. We started in 2018 a Law Entrepreneur book club, which is really just a way for me to hold myself accountable to read the books I said I was going to read in the first place, if you want to be honest. But hopefully you'll come along for the ride. And our next book we have selected is one that's been on my list for a while and came recommended by a couple of listeners. It's called Influence: The Psychology of Persuasion. And this is by noted author Robert, I think you pronounce it Cialdini, C-I-A-L-D-I-N-I, or Cialdini. This is a seminal book on the power of persuasion and how you can influence the audience to do what you want them to do. And so for us in legal practice, that our audience could be a jury or a judge or a potential new client or opposing counsel or a legislature. So we have a lot of audiences that we want to persuade and influence. And I thought this would be a good book. Besides, like I said, it's been on my list and I want to get it off my list. So that's the one that we're reading. And we will do our online Facebook book review on March 16th. At 1 p.m. in the afternoon, March 16th, is a Friday afternoon. So Friday afternoon, March 16th at 1 p.m. And I'll have more information about that as we get closer to the deal. But you can go ahead and pick up that book wherever books are sold. Now, as for today, our guest, the gentleman who is lucky enough to be guest number 100, although there wasn't any planning on that, which just kind of occurred that way, is my friend David Baton. David is the CEO and, or as they like to say, the Chief Panther for Practice Panther, a law management and client management software platform that is one of the hottest growing products in the legal management space that there is. I first met David way back a few years ago, I think at the AVO conference. And so, like as I mentioned in the podcast, it's one of those things that once you meet somebody or get exposed to them, for the first time, then you see them everywhere. And you can't turn around without running into David Baton and Practice Panther. And I think that just speaks to how popular their program, their platform has become. And I am delighted to have the opportunity to chat with him on episode 100 of The Law Entrepreneur. So let's get on with it. David Baton, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted that you could be with us today, David. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Wow, the history. All right, so where do I start? I guess I was originally grown up in New York. I moved to Miami, Florida, where I live today at 15. I love Miami, never leaving. The best weather, the best people, the best everything.
I was just down there a couple weeks ago. We should have hooked up.
Oh, you should have told me.
Yeah. I was heading out on one of those big boats.
That would have been awesome. Where do you live?
Outside of Washington, D.C.
Okay. All right. So a big difference in weather. No, it's awesome here. So after I moved here, I fell in love with Miami, didn't want to leave. So I stayed here for college, went to University of Miami, studied business management and computer information systems. I played tennis my entire life, love tennis, love computers since the age of 5. You know, this is an entrepreneur podcast. So, I mean, I have to say I was always an entrepreneur my entire life. You know, when the first CD burner came out in 5th grade, I was selling mixtapes to all my friends in school. But that's how it was. And then how did I get to where I am today? So after college, I actually worked at a very fast growing startup tech company. And that's where I met my future partner and co-founder today. So, you know, 3 years later after that, we started Practice Panther together.
So what motivated you to create Practice Panther? Were you in that the legal office management space to start with, or did something else draw you to that area?
Yeah, so great question. So basically, it's funny because originally, our idea wasn't to build a software for attorneys. The original idea was to build a CRM software that had time tracking, billing, document management, file management, and a lot more. So the funny thing is, though, that as we were building it, it took about 2 years to finally build the first version. We both got married in that time span, and both of us got married to attorneys.
No way.
So it was crazy. So we're like building this thing on the side. You know, we both had other things going on the side, and we were building this nights and weekends together. And then our wives every night would come home complaining like, oh, our software sucks. Why can't you build us a software? So we're like, you know what? Maybe we're onto something here. So we started talking to some friends, did a lot of research, talked to a lot of lawyers, looked into the industry. We saw there wasn't a lot of great competition out there years ago. So we ended up pivoting our idea. It wasn't such a big pivot because essentially it's still like a CRM software today. So we just needed to add certain features for lawyers like trust accounting, client portals, intake forms. And that's how Practice Panther was born.
Wow, that's fascinating. So So when you were doing the CRM predecessor to Practice Panther, I mean, that space was pretty populated at the time. There were lots of folks doing that kind of application, still are.
Yes.
What made you gravitate towards that?
So you were telling me how a lot of the listeners are, you know, solo, small firms, or people starting out contemplating, and they want to learn like what not to do. So I'll give you business 101, what not to do. So
that's how most entrepreneurship start off, as the classic example of don't do this. When I first started my martial arts studio, which was a career that I had before becoming an attorney, I could later then say, don't do any of those things that I did when I opened up my dojo, because they were all a complete waste of money and a waste of time. It had nothing to do with what I wanted to do, and that was to teach people the martial arts. So yeah. I suspect, I may be stepping on the lead here, but I suspect that when you first started up building your CRM platform, there were a lot of things now that might not have done then if you knew what you knew now.
Well, yes, but the biggest mistake was that, you know, at the time when we were starting it, my partner was selling his last company. I was selling I had another company. I was selling that also. So, you know, we were very cocky, big egos. We're selling our companies. Let's go big. Let's go worldwide. This is going to be bigger and better. So back then, we both had very niche companies that were targeting a very niche market. So we get very cocky. We're like, let's go big. Let's compete against Dropbox and FreshBooks and QuickBooks and PayPal. And let's go compete against everyone. Who's the market? Everyone, anyone can use us. Lawyers, doctors, dentists, DJs, computer repairmen, plumbers, karate teachers. That was actually in our list, karate teachers.
Yeah.
So we're like, everyone can use us. And like after a year and a half of starting to get this thing rolling, we're like, wow, like we have, the world is our competition. But the biggest problem that we saw was that if a lawyer would sign up, for example, they wouldn't choose us. They would choose a software built for lawyers because we weren't niche enough. And it was the same problem with every other industry. So when our wives came around, we're like, we were already looking to switch. We were already looking for the pivot. And it was so perfect, perfect timing that it made sense. So as soon as we pivoted to building the software for attorneys, it just caught on fire right away, instantly, overnight. People were going crazy, loving it, recommending it, giving us feature requests. So we knew we hit it right away.
Now, when again, before you made the pivot, and I guess maybe then after as well, was your objective to be platform agnostic, or were you developing for a particular system?
So originally, the goal was to design it to look and feel like an iPhone. You turn it on for the first time, you know how to use it. You don't need to get any training. You don't need to call Apple for support. And that still carries us today. We still have that same mentality as today. But we knew that we had to be platform agnostic. So we were built for Mac, PC, cloud software, iPhone, Android, iPad, Amazon Fire, you know, any device. So that was our goal from day one, any device.
Interesting, because I think if you trace the history of practice management tools for attorneys, obviously the PC dominated the technology platforms for so long that all the original big boys, if you will, were all PC-based. And I know when I entered the practice of law, I was a devout Apple fanboy, so and knew that I wasn't going to change. And so there weren't really any that could be supported on a Mac or an Apple platform.
Right.
And of course, now things have completely changed, and the advent of cloud computing and the idea of making your services platform independent is the only way to exist in the marketplace. So now you have a tool such as Practice Panther, which could be used on any tool that you have.
Right. And I'll add to that, you know, so in my partner's last company, that wasn't the case. They were a desktop software only for PCs. And as technology started evolving, everyone was moving to the cloud. So for those attorneys out there, the cloud is where it's at today. Everyone is moving to the cloud. It's easier, it's safer. You don't need servers. You don't need hardware. You don't need data backups. You're protected from viruses. Your computer crashes, who cares? Use your phone, use another computer. It doesn't really matter. You never lose anything. So that's why everything's moving to the cloud.
Yeah, I think there was some hesitancy on the part of attorneys specifically because they felt a loss of control of the data and a concern about exposure of client data when the resources on which that data existed, you know, weren't within their arm's reach. But as you mentioned, I think all the features and all the benefits of being cloud-based far outweigh those potential security issues. Not to say that they're not important, but you can address those.
Correct. You know, I'll tell you something funny. I used to have a computer repair company, and one of the things that we would always get calls for was corrupt Microsoft Outlook data files, PST or OST files, they're called. And if anyone listening has ever had that happen to them, it is the worst thing ever. Your entire life is on there. All your emails ever are on there. And imagine one day you open up Outlook and it's corrupted and you can't access anything. So that's kind of how I see the server versus cloud debate, where a lot of people, like my wife who used to work at the server-based software, the server would crash. They could lose data. It can get corrupted. You can't sleep at night. You always have to do backups. And that would happen with our clients with Outlook. So with the cloud, imagine you know, going to gmail.com, you will never lose your emails in Gmail ever. You know, no matter when you wake up, it is always going to be available, unlike Outlook, which could be unreliable and you could lose the data. So that's kind of how I see the debate.
Well, you kind of alluded to the idea that you wanted to be on all platforms all the time or available via any platform anytime. Was that a guiding principle in the development of Practice Panther, or what were some of the other mantras, if you will, that you kept in mind as you listened to your wives and developed for the legal space specifically?
So I have another funny one that that's definitely a good learning lesson for all the listeners. So in the beginning, we said we're going to build a software so intuitive, so easy to use that we're not going to have to hire any people. People will just find our website. They'll sign up. They'll love it. They'll learn how to use it. It'll be as simple as using an iPhone and they'll pay us and they won't have any questions, you know, taking the human element out of it. But that obviously doesn't work out that way. And much just like a law firm, a lot of the great attorneys I speak to, I ask them, how are you able to grow so fast? They're like, I'm personal. I'm personable. A client wants to speak with me. They can speak with me. They have my cell phone. They don't reach someone random. And that's how they're able to grow and build a loyal following. So it's the same with us. You know, when we started adding that human element into it of, hey, you do have someone to speak to. Hey, let us show you how you can use the software. Hey, we speak to thousands of successful attorneys. This is what you can do to be successful also. So all that helps them along the way. So that was kind of, I guess, one thing that we thought we weren't going to need, but eventually we did need.
Well, you know, I think at least in the beginning, people who were doing practice management software, they initially focused on just tracking the different legal matters through the law firm and, you know, collecting all the data for that matter. And it basically focused on the case or the legal issue being resolved in the representation. That was all that the application was about. Then later, correct me if I'm wrong, attorney said, well, but you know, I got this other function that I do that's closely related, and that's billing. Did you figure billing into the design process from the start, or was that an add-on? Or, you know, when you looked at the global picture of Practice Panther, were those pieces thought of in the beginning, or were you able to integrate them in along the way?
Yeah, good question. So billing definitely was on our list in the beginning, even on that first product. By the way, the first product even has a website that's still up. It's called Pay Panther. It's still up today, but we're not accepting new customers. Mm-hmm. So the original product was going to be an all-in-one. Time tracking, billing, CRM, everything, which is why a lot of the legal consultants out there say we're one of the best CRM softwares for lawyers, because originally we weren't a software for lawyers. Originally we were a CRM software. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of these tools that a lot of programs don't have, like lead tracking, tagging, integration with MailChimp, email campaigns, and stuff like that. So billing was an essential function, but my partner has built a lot of programs in the past. So the core of the software is built so well that we can add on anything we want, anytime we want. And now we're releasing a new version of our API, which I don't think anyone really else has. So this enables us to integrate with any other third-party software in the world if we want to as well.
Or they with you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just for our listeners' benefits who may not be that tech savvy, API stands for Application Programming Interface. And the modern application, the well-designed software, I think, That's where the money, you know, meets the road, so to speak, because it allows, as you said, third parties to integrate with your application, so you can tailor your workflow to incorporate, you know, a lot of different features that may not be necessarily within the confines of Practice Panther itself. Is that a fair statement?
Correct. Exactly. That was a good explanation, actually.
You know, yeah. I mentioned that, like, one of my pet peeves and something I'm hoping to try and resolve, and maybe you've heard this from your users as well, is I use a few programs, you know, a few applications in the management of my practice. I use, you know, Apple's Contacts for address book type data. But then my Daylight also has contacts within it. And then I use another third-party program called Contactually. All of these our listeners have heard of in the past. Contactually, to manage another aspect of my contact database. But now I have three different databases, and I'm really trying to work to figure out a way where I can enter the data once and have it work with everything. And I think that's one of the things that I like about Practice Panther is that your ability to work with other programmers is going to facilitate that capability.
Correct. So that was one of the things early on where instead of entering the client in QuickBooks, entering him into your billing system, entering him into MailChimp, entering him into Practice Panther, you can do it all in one shot. Now, that's not to say that people still love their other softwares they're using. So let's say you love Contactually and you also love Practice Panther. So you want to use them for CRM and you want to use us for billing. You could do that through the API or through something that we call Zapier. So
right.
Zapier is Zapier, an amazing platform online, I'm sure you know about it, that lets you connect with thousands of different applications. So we connect with them. If your software that you like connects with Zapier, then they will help make the connection automatically between us if it already exists. So you can do all that right away.
Yeah, and that's kind of the workflow that I'm starting to explore to try and make that a little more seamless. But I like I think you're ahead of the game because you have that in mind from the start.
Yes, correct.
So, what are some of the other benefits that Practice Panther offers an attorney that maybe they haven't thought about? I mean, I think sometimes, particularly with new attorneys going into a solo practice, they don't really know what they don't know. So what are some of the features that you think are selling points and strong points for the application?
So I guess I'll start with the problems that a lot of attorneys face. So in the beginning, I spoke to a lot of friends that were coming out of law school, starting their own firms, or even ones that had firms for a few years, and they all told me the same thing. I don't have any time. I'm spending all my time doing back-end admin work. I have no time to practice law. I'm too busy to do something else. I wish I had a system earlier so I can get more organized. Because in the early days, you're just trying to save as much money as possible. But then 2-3 years later, when you have a big firm, it's very hard to go back now. It's going to take a lot more time to set up later on down the road. So in the early days, the big problems that people are having is they're just spending so much time doing manual work, like keeping track of who to call, following up with your clients, which a lot of people don't do, following up on leads or tracking your time. Most solos and small firms still track time today on pen and paper or an Excel sheet or a Google sheet. And then at the end of the month, once a month, they're trying to calculate all of it, put it all together, put it in a Microsoft Word invoice template, save it as a PDF, print it, put it in an envelope, mail it, fax it, scan it, I don't know, email it. They do all this work. And I talk to a lot of attorneys that tell me that it takes them, I mean, you would know this even better than I do, 8 hours, 16 hours, like a whole day, a whole weekend just to do billing once a month. And if you ask them, how much money did you make this month? How much profit did you make? I don't know. I'll just check my bank account. You know, who are the clients that owe you the most money? How much money do you have in your trust account per client? They can't answer these basic questions, which is really bad. So in my opinion, the number one thing attorneys can do, regardless if it's our software or something else, is try to automate all these mundane tasks that are killing your workflow. Automate as much as you can in your firm. You can even outsource some of this stuff. So if you could automate it and save yourself 8 hours a week, that's, 32 hours a month in just billable time that could be spent making money. So my personal...
And at my rate, that's like $32 a month I'm saving.
yeah. So my personal favorite features, even if you're using a software today, you might not even be using these features. So find out if you have them. So intake forms is a big one. I love intake forms because traditionally, when you would ask your client all these questions, you could send them an email now with a questionnaire on your website, or you could just put it on your website. Or imagine this, when someone comes into your office, you could hand them an iPad with the questionnaire there, and whenever they fill it out, wherever they fill it out from, it will automatically go into your software. And then in one click, you could generate a contract, a retainer agreement, or any document because the information is already there. So intake forms will save you a lot of time. And if you think about the workflow, this is how it would look in the ideal perfect law firm. The client fills out a questionnaire. It goes into your software. In one click, you could generate a document template, but automatically that client's email address will also automatically go into MailChimp, which will automatically send them email campaigns for you. So the whole keyword is automatic, automatic, automatic. Now, I love talking about this because when I was looking for a dentist, I went to two or three, I got recommended to a few. And it's funny, the one that I ended up choosing was the one that had the best systems and the best technology, and the one that really impressed me the most. So what do I mean? They scheduled the appointment online. I got text message reminders. Then I came into the office. They handed me an iPad to fill out. Then everything was electronic and everything was really easy. And then I got a bill online. So it was that whole experience that made me go with them. And it got me thinking, I was like, wow, how come my dentist sends me text messages and birthday reminders and online intake forms, and lawyers don't? They don't do this. Dentists and doctors are far ahead of lawyers. But the truth is, lawyers have these tools. They're just not using them.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding.
Yeah, it's interesting. Back in another one of my previous lifetimes, when I was a systems and software engineer, I remember I had a vice president in our company, Howie Eisner. I don't know what Dr. Eisner's doing these days, but he envisioned a day when we'd have all these applications and they would all talk to each other through some kind of framework to allow us to do exactly what you're talking about, using one piece of the program for billing, one piece of the program for client management, one piece of the program for document generation, and they all seamlessly talk to each other through the hub of the application itself. And that sounds like where Practice Panther's really made a lot of strides, some big strides.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's getting there. That's where the future is. Everything is going to talk to each other. Everything will connect through the use of APIs and everything else.
Yeah, because I can tell you that I spoke to an attorney not too long ago who had three different applications on this computer that were capable of tracking time and creating an invoice and linking with his accounting system. And yet, he had not taken the time to learn any of those three. And he was literally recording it on paper.
Yep.
And handing it to a bookkeeper to input into QuickBooks.
Yep, that's correct.
And I think that's the mindset for a lot of attorneys.
Yeah, it's not the best. I think it's probably the mindset, because that's how things were done. That's how they saw things in their old firm. But today, why? You know, why? There's so many better ways. You can save yourself so much time and money. So, you know, back to my previous example, my wife and even my partner's wife would come home late at night every night. They'd miss dinner. And we're like, this is crazy. What are you doing? Well, the system went down. Today's billing day. We got to do invoices. We got to collect. I'm like, why? There are better programs out there that can do all this for you. Come on, come home earlier. And now, luckily, they're coming home earlier for dinner on time, thankfully.
So the marketplace for tools such as Practice Panther has gotten bigger.
Yep.
It's gotten a little more competitive. There are tools and applications that do a lot in a similar way between each other. So what's the biggest roadblock do you see for attorneys adopting, if not Practice Panther, then any tool? I mean, a lot of them, I think it's inertia. They just, you know, don't get out of their own way. How do you see it from the field?
So I think the question becomes, when do they start implementing a new software? Why? What happens? So usually you only see it after something bad happens, like, oh, I lost all my files, this got corrupted, another headache, another this, another that. And then they really have the motivation to do something new. And that's always the problem, you know, like the Microsoft Outlook example I gave earlier. People only start backing up their data after it crashes and they have a really bad first experience. So they're being reactive instead of proactive. But then I think the biggest roadblock people have after they've made the decision to take the next step forward is they go back to their same routines over again. So today I'm excited. I'm going to sign up for 10 softwares. I'm going to try them. I'm going to start using one of them. And then next week it's you come back into work on Monday, you forget about it, and you just go right back into your routine. So that's the problem with everything new, I feel like, in life. They're like, you know, New Year's, I'm going to work out. It's a resolution. And then a week, and you sign up for a gym. And then a month later, you cancel your membership. So we see people go 80% of the way. They're doing the training. They're importing. They're doing everything. And then 3 weeks later, they're like, hey, I'm too busy. I can't do it anymore. We're like, the funny thing is, like, you're too busy because you don't have a system now. Like, don't give up. You're so close. You're almost there. Like, don't waste all that time. You spent so much time getting to the stage. You know, you're 10% left. So I think sometimes it takes a little more work in the beginning to get properly set up. But once you've done it, and it doesn't take that long, the time savings you'll see is exponential afterwards.
Yeah, don't snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. You're almost there. Correct. You know? So again, I have the advantage of being really old. So back in the day, I mean, I liken it a little bit to when word processors took off in terms of feature sets. We started off with pretty simplistic word processing applications, and then we got to a point where Microsoft Word had everything in the kitchen sink in it. Yep. In terms of capabilities, and the feature bloat actually got to the point where it was counterproductive to the utility of the application. How do you, in an effort to try and satisfy as many legal issues as possible on one platform, how do you guard against that concern?
So, you know, it's funny you mentioned that question, because when I met you in Orlando at that convention, I think it was Milo Fest.
Yeah.
Someone asked that question. Was that you? Was that you who asked that question? No, I think it was someone else.
No, probably not.
Yeah. So great question. So we are very proud that we are updating our software every single week. That's one of the things that people love about us. We keep innovating. We keep adding features. We keep improving while still keeping the core, which is making the software as easy to use as possible. So the hard part becomes, how do you keep adding features and improving without making it complicated or overly complicated or making it new things for your current customer? So it's, you know, I'll tell you, it is really hard making things really easy. Really hard. I've read countless books on UI, UX, studied Steve Jobs. It's really hard. And we spend a lot of time on it. So the answer is that whenever we add something new, we try to spend as much time on usability and UI UX as possible. So I'll give you an example. Last week, we're adding a new feature. or the invoices page, where you're going to be able to send recurring invoices and charge customers every month on a payment plan over and over again. Okay, great. In most software companies, like we used to do in previous companies, was like, okay, add a button and there you go. There's your feature. Goodbye. But now it's like, no. It's got to be stupid simple. Where do we want to add the button? What is it going to look like? What is the color? If someone's already using our software, they're going to notice it. So maybe we should add some hover text. When they hover over it, it will show them what it's going to be. Maybe we should add a video to explain it. You know, all these questions on a simple button, you know, one button. We'll spend hours on one button, but that's how important it is to us. Now, on the other side, we like to, there's a lot of advanced features. So for majority of the people, they're going to use, let's say, the 80% of the software, hopefully, and the super advanced users will use the other crazy 20%. So for those really advanced users, we have settings pages very hidden away for them that if they want to start turning on crazy advanced features, they can, and they'll ask us how, and we'll guide them to a very hidden secret settings page somewhere that no one really needs to see. If you want to customize and go crazy, you can, but we're not going to let that, you know, bog down the rest of our members who aren't going to be using that. So that's how we see it.
That kind of raises the next question I was going to ask you about. And I think another area that companies fall flat on is failing to pay attention to the training needs or the support issues with respect to their application. Me personally, you know, just how you said that you selected your dentist based on, you know, how they manage their practice, how it aligned with the way you see the world. For me, when I'm looking at a application, I always want there to be video libraries showing me how to use it.
Yes.
Is that the way of the future, or is that just me being old and not wanting to read?
So I agree with you. I am a big fan of video, but I think it is also, you know, different people learn differently. Some people learn visually. Some people learn with numbers. They need to have things quantified for them. Some people like to be taught on the phone. Some people like screen share, walk me through it, handholding, come to my office, show me how to do it. So for us, we try to cover every possible scenario. So we have live training on the phone, one-on-one. We have webinar training. We have training tutorials, screenshots, articles, videos. We have everything.
So you're running the whole gamut there.
Everything. Yeah, everything. And my personal favorite is videos. So we put a lot of emphasis on videos. But for us, at least, we always, you know, whenever someone asks us, how are you different? And we always say, oh, we're the easiest. But we always tell people, hey, you tell us who's the easiest. Take the test. We call it the usability test. Take the usability test. I want you to sign up to the top five competitors and sign up to us. And don't speak to anyone. Don't get any training. I just want you to sign up to five programs and try to figure out on your own. And you come back and tell me who is the easiest. So for us, like I said, since day one, we wanted to eliminate the people part of it. So we had to always make it as easy as possible. Like when you turn on your iPhone, no one's standing next to you teaching you how to use it for the most part. You're pretty much just setting it up on your own. And that was the idea behind Practice Panther. But obviously, we have a training department, we have training programs, but it's very simple. It's a 1 hour training. That's it.
Yeah.
Advanced training is one more hour. So in 1 or 2 hours, you're completely training our software. And training a new employee that comes onto your firm, you could send them one of our 30-minute videos. That's it. It's not a two-day, two-week process. That's it. It's a 30-minute video.
Interesting. Do you guys have, you know, any relationship with or visibility into the law schools and how they look at products such as yours, or is there no consideration?
You know what? You'd be surprised how much law schools and professors are now making technology and software and practice management part of their curriculum. So over the last few years, we've actually given out thousands of free licenses to law students all over the US because the professors are asking for it. That's what I find, more than the actual school itself. So a professor who teaches technology, they will bring our software in, bring me in on a virtual webinar, explain it, why it's so important when you start your own firms. Because I think today a lot of the students graduating law school, it's shifting a lot. You see a lot of students graduating now, starting their own practices right out of law school.
Yeah.
Whether it's because they have no choice, they can't find a job, or just because they're more entrepreneurial. And you see a lot of people working for someone else for only millennials. They don't want to work for anyone. They want to work for someone for 2-3 years, quit and do it on their own. So a lot of law schools are recognizing that, and they're working into the curriculum today.
Well, that pendulum is really swung all the way to the other side now, and I think that's the preferred model now for students in law school. They don't see themselves working in a big firm and, you know, doing the 80 hours a week associate slog. They see themselves as, I'm gonna find a great tool like Practice Panther, and I'm gonna watch Shark Tank, and I'm gonna read Tim Ferriss's book, and
4-hour work week, yeah,
and I'm gonna make this work, and God love them, it works for a lot. It's one of the reasons this podcast exists.
yeah, it's so true. So I mean, there's a lot of advice I'd give to those people who are just gonna jump in without any experience. You know, if you're new, you are thinking about it, it's awesome. It's a great journey, but there's a lot of things you should do before. So I'm going to give you my personal email. Reach out to me. I will send you as much material as I can on how to build the right firm, practices, procedures, processes. My personal email is david@practicepanther.com. I think the best advice I can give is to build a procedure guide. So there's a great book that a lot of consultants have been recommending. It's called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Gerber, have you heard of it, Neil?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you read it?
Yes, E-Myth and The E-Myth Revisited.
Exactly. So I never read it, but everyone talks about it. Why?
Well, I think it's because it puts into the framework or makes it understandable. It's how people can leverage today's technology in even an old school business practice such as law.
Got it. So there's one client and friend of ours. His name is Brent Sibley, and he is a great example of someone who went on his own and did it really well and really successful. And I speak to thousands of attorneys a month, and I can tell you, he's so successful because of what he does, and I start seeing this over and over again. So what does he do? He built something called the Bible of his law firm. And what it is, it's essentially a book of every single procedure on how to do every single thing in the law firm. For example, what do you do when someone calls the law firm as a new client? What do you do once you retain the client? What do you do after the case? Anytime he needs to hire anyone going forward, you can imagine how quick the training process is, because all they have to do is refer to the Bible for anything they need. No mistakes are made, and he's able to grow extremely fast.
Yeah, I hear that more and more. I've seen that in the people that we've had on the show, even going to the point where they have a standardized format for a procedure. So the procedure would have a number, a title, a purpose, definition of what the purpose— Correct. —of the procedure is, a list of participants, who's involved in this procedure, what the objective, the goal upon completion of this procedure would be, and then the steps of the procedure, and then having the employees actually write those and keep them up to date, keep their job description booklets up to date using that standardized format for procedure definition. And I think that says a lot.
Correct. And I got to tell you, you know, we started building one ourselves just because we've seen, wow, look how many other people are doing it. So now ours is over 100 pages long for every department in our company. And if you ever plan on selling your law firm or passing it on to someone else, it will make it so much easier when you're like, here, this is the guide to doing everything in our law firm. It's amazing.
You know, we're getting a little off topic here, but I will tell you that one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately is succession planning.
Yes.
For attorneys. And this is a key component of succession planning, having the procedures defined as to how your law firm works. And then one of those procedures is how to manage the database that you're using and who has access to it and how can they access it if you're not available. So those are important questions to address.
I mean, I always ask attorneys, what's going to happen if you take a vacation for a week or a month? You know, what's going to happen? Or what's going to happen if, God forbid, you get sick and you can't work, or someone quits and you have to hire someone else? You know, and it's crazy. It's a rush. If you have a procedure guide, you never need to worry about anything.
Well, sadly, you have to ask the question, what happens if you get hit by a bus?
Yeah.
And, you know, if this is a legacy practice that you want to, hand down from generation to generation, you have to have that that succession planning addressed. But anyway, David, listen, I wanted to, before we got too far off.
We can talk for hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want to thank you for being on the show today. You've already given out your personal email address. We will have the website URL in our show notes, but of course, it's just simply practicepanther, all one word, .com. I invite our listeners to go there, check it out. You can try the software for free. David and I met, as he mentioned, at a conference down in Florida. But frankly, it's one of those things like, you know how you don't notice somebody or something, and then all of a sudden you can't stop noticing that person or noticing that thing. I think the first time that I ran into Practice Panther was actually at the AVO conference.
Yep.
And then everywhere I went, Practice Panther showed up. Every conference I went to, every CLE I went to, every bar association meeting I went to, yeah. I kept tripping over the guys in Practice Panther. So I'm delighted that I finally got to have the time, and for you to be on episode 100 of the Law Entrepreneur. I don't know, something cosmic about that. I think
that's awesome.
I think that's gonna, let's keep our fingers crossed, mean good things for you and everybody there at Practice Panther. So again, Dave, thanks ever so much for taking the time to be on with us today on The Law Entrepreneur. And I look forward to maintaining our connection and this relationship well into the future.
Oh, it's been awesome. Thank you for having me. I did want to add, if anyone is interested in learning more, you can email me again, david@practicepanther.com. We are also offering, I never told you this, Neil, but anyone who's listening can get 60% off their first 2 months if you want to try it out.
Good gravy.
By using, I made a coupon code just for you. It's coupon code Tyra, T-Y-R-A. So you can plug that in. And I don't know if I told you either, we're coming out with a book, which could be great for all the listeners, on how to start, market, and grow your firm. And it was written by 15 legal industry experts and consultants. So if anyone wants, send me an email with your address and I will send you a copy for free as soon as we publish it.
Wow. Fellow law entrepreneurs, that is, as they say, we call that a godfather deal. You know, a deal you cannot turn down, you cannot refuse. So that sounds terrific. Well, thanks again ever so much, Dave. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.